Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and this is the Sunday Roundup. Rebel forces in Syria have captured Damascus and Bashar al-Assad has reportedly fled the capital, ending a regime that began in the year 2000. On Sky News this morning, Deputy Prime Minister Angela Rayner told Trevor Phillips she welcomes that news.
Angela Rayner, what can you tell us about the situation in Syria this morning?
Well, the situation looks very serious, and if Assad regime has fallen, then I welcome that news. But what we need to see is a political resolution in line with the UN resolutions, and we need to see civilians and infrastructure protected. Far too many people have lost their lives. We need stability in that region.
I'm interested in what you said about welcoming news, but before we do that, before I ask you about that, what do we know about British citizens in there, the number, their safety, anything that we should know about?
Well, the Foreign Secretary and, obviously, our Foreign Office are working. You'll have heard last week the Foreign Secretary was very clear about UK civilians leaving Syria. We've had a plan to ensure that people were evacuated ahead of what's happened over the weekend, and we continue to support our UK nationals.
Trevor Phillips also asked Shadow Foreign Secretary Priti Patel about Syria and the wider implications for the region.
Of course, there's a set of wider implications for the region. How do you read it? Stronger Turkey, maybe Russian withdrawal, who knows, from Iran? What's your take?
I think, first of all, there's clearly an element of the Turkish footprint is relevant here. It really is. I've been here at a discussion, a dialogue where Turkey have been actively speaking, representatives from the Turkish government, they've been actively speaking about what is going on in Syria. So there's no question that they have equities here and they're going to be a voice in all of this.
Did you think they knew what was going to happen?
Well, I can't speculate on that. You know, they're closer to it and obviously they'll have access to all sorts of reports and information that I suspect we don't even know about. On the Russian side of this conflict, it's clear that they have been consumed with Ukraine. And the fact that we've seen such fast movement, obviously, in Syria around Damascus so quickly tells us something, obviously, about they've scaled back. The reality is, though, Trevor, we have the long-standing issue of Iran, Iranian proxies, Iranian influence across the region. And this is a long-standing challenge for all of us. And I think certainly in this part of the world, and also from a UK perspective, we have to work incredibly hard now to try and address some of these wider challenges. And of course, we can't do this ourselves. We'll do this with our allies and friends in this region. But also, we'll be looking very clearly to America going forward as we move into the new year too.
Angela Rayner also spoke about Labour's plans to build 1.5 million more homes by 2029. On the BBC, Rayner admitted that the government's plans are a stretch target, which would require a scale of house building not seen since the 1950s.
Most people agree that the country does desperately need more homes, and the government has promised an extra 1.5 million by 2029. That's easy to say. It's maybe 1.5 million harder, million times harder to do. Even though it's now on Keir Starmer's priority list, it is a tall order. But Angela Rayner, as Deputy Prime Minister, it's your job to make it happen. Governments for years have tried to do this. What makes you think you're going to be able to achieve it when other governments have failed so many times before?
Well, Laura, first of all, you're absolutely right. The ramping up of house building, we haven't seen it on this scale since the 1950s after the Second World War. So it is a tall order. It is a stretch target. But we're determined to change the planning regulations, to invest more into affordable homes programme and to deliver the housing we desperately need. Keir Starmer last week as Prime Minister was very clear and levelling with the public. We said we'd build these homes. It's going to take us a lot of change to deliver that. And I think Ben touched on it. There are things we have to do in order to stop these developments being stuck in the system, and we're determined to deliver that.
One of those, and we'll hear more detail on it this week, but you are going to grab some power from local councils so that planning applications can be, in some cases, waved through, in some places just speeded up. But why do you think that you and Keir Starmer, sitting in Westminster, know better than local councillors on the ground?
Well, first of all, we consulted back when we were elected in July. I started a consultation on the National Planning Policy Framework. So experts, local councils, public were able to feed into that consultation. So we'll have clarity on the National Planning Policy Framework. Then we're having mandatory local plans. So local areas will have to come forward with what they think their housing needs are and how they're going to deliver it. So there's no need to then keep going round and round in a system. If you deliver on the National Planning Policy Framework and within the local plan, then we should be able to streamline that process and get those developments.
But if you cut through the jargon, what is going to happen is that you are, in some cases, going to force councils to build in parts of the country where they might not want to, and they believe that local people don't all want there to be building. So I'll ask you again, why do you think you and Keir Starmer, as a matter of principle, know better than people in local areas?
Well, at the moment, we haven't had mandatory local plans, and therefore we've seen speculative developments in areas through permitted development. I'm saying to local planning and local authorities, get your plan in order so you decide, based on the affordability and the challenges in your area that you know about, decide where you think this development should happen. If they follow the National Planning Policy Framework and that local plan, then we shouldn't have it stuck in the system for years, and therefore we're going to push ahead.
Shadow Treasury Minister Richard Fuller described Labour's housing targets as reasonable, but suggested they were still ignoring the wishes of local people.
Let's start then with housing and planning. Are you happy that Labour's now picking this up and they're going to sweep all the numbers aside?
Well, they're sort of moving with the targets we have. It was hard, you rightly said. Under the last government, though, we did build 1 million new houses, and at the last year it was running at a rate of 1.2 million. So for a five-year term. So 1.5 is a reasonable target. But what we also learned was if you want to achieve that, you've got to bring the people with you. And unfortunately, Labour seem to be saying that Angela knows best and local people can be ignored.
Local people can be ignored, do you think that's what they are saying? So will you disagree? Will you refuse to back their plans then?
We'll have to see precisely what they're going to come out with. But it is important that you try and bring people with you. In Angela's constituency, I was just looking at the numbers, actually. So in Angela's constituency, from 2011 to 2021, the population increased 7%. In my area, it was 16%. 16% increase in population. We achieved that. That did put pressure on local services, but we were able to bring the local people with us over that.
But are you a blocker and a naysayer?
Not if we're growing at twice the national average, nearly three times the national average. So it is important, though, that the public services come with you. So in our area, there have been pressures on having GP services available. There have been pressures on school projects. So it's important that Angela Rayner and the government look at that. I also think if Labour now are saying they're interested in looking at deregulation, some of those pesky regulations that get in the way but are important regulations, that's good news. The Labour Party in opposition weren't prepared to do that. I think it is important, we've heard about those arms length bodies this morning, that we look at those and see what can be done to deregulate the way that, the planning is done.
And finally, this week, Storm Dara killed two people and left thousands without power across the country. Speaking to Laura Koonsberg, Climate Change Committee CEO Emma Pinchbeck said the country had to prepare for the worsening effects of climate change.
We have to prepare for it. We have to prepare our infrastructure for it. We have to prepare the economy for it. We have to prepare homes for it. We're off track against where we should be. And that's things like flood defences, or are our houses built on floodplains? In the summer, it's are our cities ready for extreme heat?
What does that mean, though? I mean, as we speak today, you know, tens of thousands of people have been left without power. Sadly, somebody has lost their life. If the government doesn't act more convincingly on adapting us for this kind of environment, are we putting people in danger?
It's really obvious that there are risks to us all from these kind of weather events. And it is very clear that both if we don't tackle climate change internationally, these impacts will get worse over our lifetimes. But also that if we don't invest in the economy, even as it is today, even with the impacts we're experiencing at this level of global warming, that there will be risks. We should be acting now to tackle them.
How important would you say it is to viewers that actually, as a country, we spend more on this, that we spend more to protect ourselves from the risks that are coming down the track?
I think we talk a lot about the costs of tackling climate change. What we have rarely talked about in the, you know, 16 or so years I've been working is the costs of not tackling climate change. And we have two committees at the Climate Change Committee. Confusing, singular. We have the Mitigation Committee, which is where we're revising how to take carbon out of the economy. We also have this other expert group, which is, you know, dealing with the economy as it is. And I would really like for that second committee to have more profile, to have the resources to do the kind of advice that we need to do for government to resource this properly, because we're clear that they're not. And perhaps in the time that I'm chief exec, to bring those committees together sometime.
That's all for this week. I'm Isabel Hardman, and this podcast was produced by Joe Bedell-Brill. Don't forget to subscribe to the Coffee House Shots podcast on the iTunes store. And if you enjoyed this podcast, do subscribe to our daily evening blend email. It's a free roundup of all the political news each day, along with analysis and a diary on what to expect next. Just go to spectator.co.uk/blend. Thanks for listening, and do join us again next week.